still here, and my heart is whole and full of faith. Satan, on your best day, you didn't take me out on my worst day. I am still here holding on to the God who fulfills every promise. I'm still trusting. I'm still full of hope. Sometimes I think God uses the people who simply outlast the devil. Like Caleb, they are wholehearted and full of defiant hope. They want to be used by God and make a difference. They stay in the Word, and the Word keeps them alive. They remain full of purpose, decade after decade. They don't give up on possessing their promised land, ever. They have a different spirit, a spirit of fully alive. I often say that the reason God is using me like He is today is simply because I'm still here, because I have allowed God to heal me and to continue healing me. When you get to be my age, it seems as though many have dropped out of the race and God has fewer options to choose from. But I can tell you from personal experience that if you stay in the race, if you keep your heart whole, God can and will use you. He will get His glory through whoever is willing, available, and tenaciously wholehearted. The wilderness transforms. Wherever you are on your journey, God still has more assignments for you. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11. This verse isn't just for high school graduation cards. I know the plans. God has lots of plans. Plans for a hope and a future for every day of your life, right up to the last breath you take. Your life isn't over if you're willing to be all in. When you come to Christ, you become a Christian, and the life of a Christian is meant to be a lifelong, continual expansion, not contraction, of the heart. Our hearts are made to grow bigger and stronger, but if we don't manage our disappointments well, our hearts begin to shrink. Then it isn't long until we start to grow fearful, to lose sight of our assignments and destiny, to feel weary of life and faith. We can't control what life sends us, but we can control how we respond. After all, the only way through is through. If Caleb had known an 11-day journey was going to be 40 years of circling the same mountain, he might not have signed up. But when the unexpected interruptions began, he adapted. Despite the detours, he held on to the promises and kept his heart growing and whole. He stayed all in. Kylie did too, once she learned what she could only learn through her wilderness experience. The most important lesson I learned was to value people, she said. I truly learned to love the people there, to cherish what made them happy and to admire them. They worked hard to provide for their families, and they got pleasure out of so many things I'd overlooked in life. My time there wasn't about who I was or what I could offer. It was about learning to love and accept people for who they are, just as Christ loves and accepts us. Then, when we'd been there 12 years and things were stable and good, I was hit with another unexpected. I was 36 weeks pregnant with our fourth child when Sam told me he believed the Lord wanted him to resign and look for work back in the city we'd come from. I immediately said, "No, you're not resigning. I can't leave my job either. I'm pregnant. Who's going to hire me this close to having a baby?" It was hard to believe I was the one saying all this, but I was truly happy where I was. God had changed me. Now that I was comfortable and settled again, the thought of leaving was too scary. Me, of all people, the woman who fought for 8 long years to escape my wilderness and all God wanted to do in me. Kylie laughed. Now I didn't want to leave, even if the promised land might be the next stop. I was so stressed, but Sam followed what God was calling him to, and it opened doors to a future I could not have imagined. We moved back to the city, and Sam took a position at a large church. I was thrilled to be back with my family and old friends, but I had come back a different person. The wilderness changes you, for the better, if you let God do the work in you. Kylie learned how to live wholehearted in an unexpected place. I would have never been prepared for the next step in my journey if we hadn't moved away all those years ago. It was during that time I learned how to find God when I couldn't see where my wilderness was leading, and how to take steps forward even when I could not hear his voice. I remembered biblical principles I'd been taught when I was growing up, and I decided to do what they said. I prayed, I read my Bible, I wrote in my journal, I gave God what was in my hand, and he helped me develop a great health and fitness training business. I trusted him even when I didn't have any emotional assurance that he was there. I learned how to truly practice faith, which the Bible defines as confidence in what we hope for, and assurance about what we do not see. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. I learned to walk by faith and not by sight during those years. I had to let God work in my heart before I could live in peace and really flourish. What Kylie and I both have learned over the years is how to keep our peace, especially over the things we can't control. I'm determined to keep my peace at all costs, because if the enemy can get my peace, he can get my heart. I've learned that just because everything in my life is going crazy doesn't mean I have to. I can't tell you how many times I've said to myself, "Christine, just because everyone else is having a meltdown doesn't mean you have to. You have my permission to not freak out." Remember how I said God never sleeps or slumbers? So there's no point in both of us staying up all night? So let's cast our cares and anxieties on him and go to bed. Worry and stress will age us. Peace that surpasses all understanding will keep us wholehearted. The unexpected is never going to stop happening. So let's be disciplined enough in the wilderness to strengthen our hearts and live wholehearted no matter what is going on around us. Lord, even if I cannot see you, I trust you. Even if I can't hear you, I trust you. Kylie's promised land, the place God had been preparing for her and preparing her for, was far more than she would have experienced had she never moved to a small town where she learned to truly value people. 18 years after she and Sam married and first moved away from all she'd known, Kylie joined the pastoral team of the church in which she'd been raised, and for the next decade, she served faithfully, loving people in the way God had transformed her heart to do. "When I was in my 20s, I would just dream," Kylie said. "I'd dream of all I was going to do for the kingdom. And when I married, I let those dreams die. I let them go. But eventually, I let God deal with me so he could resurrect them. I've been living these dreams for a decade now, and I'm still living them. I can preach. I can disciple. I can create. I can connect women to each other. I can motivate them. I can do what's in my hand to do, but I have to keep my hand open to God. Now I say to God, whatever you have next, I'm in, all in." I finally got to that place of genuine trust. "Every now and then, Sam and I will drive out to the countryside and visit our old town," Kylie said. "When we drive past the church and our old house, I feel a nostalgic tug at my heart. I can see the hand of God all over those 12 years, and I'm so thankful for the process I walked through. I worked hard in that season of my life, at raising our children, having a strong marriage, developing my business, and letting God transform me so my interior was as fit and healthy as my exterior. I worked hard at what was in my hands, and I let God take me from brokenhearted and half-hearted to wholehearted." Kylie's journey shows us that in every season of change, there is an opportunity to adjust to the unexpected. There is an opportunity to let go of more of our control and embrace more of God, to trust him more than we ever have before. It's easy to get caught up in where we're going, of believing in the trajectory we may have planned for our lives. But it's so important to trust him, even when we honestly don't want to. that strengthens our hearts and keeps us in a place of living wholehearted. It keeps us in a place of living expectant within our unexpected, of anticipating all the good God has for us in every experience, of being willing to risk something new, of living with a faith-filled perspective, fully trusting God, no matter what. Chapter 7. When the unexpected requires risk, stretching beyond. It's strange how new and unexpected conditions bring out unguessed ability to meet them. Edgar Rice Burroughs. I just want to make a difference. It was a familiar heart cry I had read many times before in hundreds of volunteer applications from young people wanting to serve at A21, typically college-age singles who wanted to assist with operational support, graphic arts, photography, filming, social media, or technology. But never had I read those words on an application from a grandmother. I couldn't help but be intrigued, and I couldn't stop reading her story. "I know God has work for me to do," she wrote. "Every time I open my Bible, He shows me through verse after verse that there's more. I want my life to count." Her name was Laura, and she lived in Southern California. She had been married for more than 30 years, raised two daughters and a son, and welcomed three grandchildren into this world. I'm sure her life had already counted in very meaningful ways, but she wanted to do more. "I know everyone expects me to start living at a slower pace now that my husband and I are empty nesters. I'm supposed to have lunch with girlfriends and fill my days hanging out with my grandchildren, but everything inside of me says, no, that's not what God has for me. I feel very vulnerable thinking this way, but I know God wants me to step out towards something I've never known." Someone over the age of 50 with a vision to still make a difference? Someone who has raised a family, led a successful life, and still thinks there's more to do to make her life count? That spoke to me. As I continued reading through the stack of volunteer applications, I was impressed by all of them, sent in from around the world, but I couldn't help going back to Laura's. I wanted to read her story again. 4 years ago, my youngest daughter was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that left her virtually bedridden for a year. Then my older daughter suffered two miscarriages, and we learned that she also suffered from the same autoimmune disease. In researching solutions, I discovered that I too had suffered from this same disease all my life, only in a milder form. All my adult life, I have dealt with bouts of fatigue, brain fog, and days that have felt like every step was completely uphill. Together, we followed our doctor's directives, researched natural solutions, and completely changed our lifestyle and diet. Today, all three of us are healed. I feel God has given me a new lease on life, and I want to serve Him with this gift of health He's given me. I've never felt better in my entire life. I certainly understood what it was like to face an unexpected diagnosis and then to feel a renewed sense of purpose. I've taken an inventory of my life, and I want to be used by God differently than ever before. Such tenacity and passion. Such intentionality. As I kept reading, I learned that Laura had volunteered in various capacities throughout the earlier decades of her life, fundraising for her children's Christian school, leading Bible studies, and supporting outreaches in her community. She obviously had served the Lord faithfully for a long time. I feel a sense of responsibility to step way out of my comfort zone. I know there's more that God has called me to do. I have always prayed for our team, for God to send us exactly who we needed and who needed us, and He has always sent us truly gifted people, people who wanted to do more, people determined to fulfill their purpose and potential, people willing to give their time and talents to help expand God's kingdom, people like Laura. I learned about A21 when I attended a Propel event, she wrote. As Christine described their work to help abolish slavery around the globe, my heart started racing, and I knew God was showing me something about my future. I believe I'm supposed to continue serving God by volunteering for A21. Yes, Laura understood the charge I believe we are all to accept, to keep living our lives on mission and running hard after Jesus, no matter what our age, to fulfill all God has created us to be and all that He has created us to do here on earth, and to take everyone we can with us to heaven. She had my attention and my heart, and I wanted her in our office as fast as possible. I also couldn't wait to find out how the dynamics of an office staffed by dozens of passionate millennials would change when a grandmother joined the team. Our golden volunteer. To say that Laura felt intimidated her first day, her first week, or first month is an understatement. She knew how to make phone calls, input data, and organize files, but not how to run the world with a few apps like the other volunteers did. She felt ill-equipped, but she still believed she could make a difference. She felt inadequate, but she was still willing to take a risk. She felt uncomfortable, but she was still willing to be led by people half her age. She felt afraid that she would fall on her face, but she still stepped out in faith. Faith gave her the courage to be inconvenienced and interrupted, to risk humiliation, to risk rejection, to just show up. Laura knew God had work for her to do, so she showed up every day to do His work, and the team loved her. They taught her technology, and she taught them how to pause their technology and connect with each other and with God. The team needed her wisdom, and she needed their youthful zeal and enthusiasm for life. As Laura worked and learned, she discovered that she had more capacity than she realized. She was amazed at how fast she could change gears. And skills she once considered beyond her reach quickly became part of her routine, all because she took an unexpected risk. God showed Laura what He wants all of us to know at every age, in every season and stage of life. There is always more. As long as we are alive, we have a purpose to fulfill. We have a mission to complete. We have God assignments to pursue. As soon as we finish one, God will have another. The challenge is that there is often a temptation to settle for less, or to allow social norms and others' expectations to dictate what occupies our time and attention in each season of life, from starting a career, getting married, and having children, to eventually retiring. But those norms and expectations can be wrong. It is God alone who orders our steps and gives purpose to each season of our lives. As I watched Laura navigate her new role, I was encouraged by the way she was young in spirit, but mature enough to shepherd all the younger volunteers with the kind of wisdom that only comes with age. The 20-somethings were miles away from home and needed someone like her, a spiritual parent. She mentored them, encouraged them, and often prayed with them. I have always valued the contributions of different generations, knowing we need the wisdom of the older generation, the resources of the middle generation, and the energy of the younger generation all working together. And I loved seeing it happen in our office. One night, at team dinner, Laura told me more of her story, and I began to realize the cultural norms she had defied when she sent us her application. In the months prior to applying for our volunteer position, there were many times when she had lunch or coffee with friends and felt the same kind of peer pressure every kid does, to do what is expected, when it's expected, and how it's expected. I'm so glad she courageously chose to do the unexpected. My friends and I had always looked forward to the day when our kids would be grown so we could play tennis and golf and just enjoy ourselves, Laura said. But the closer that day came, the more disappointed I felt. It was so surprising to have looked forward to something for years and then to realize it's not how I even wanted to spend my time. One day at lunch, as my friends and I talked about trips we were planning and what we were going to do with our grandkids, I felt like I was talking about someone else's life and not my own. It was clearly not what God wanted me to do, but it was the expected thing to do. That's when I began to question all of it, and I realized retirement wasn't God's will for me. Not now, not as long as I still have a pulse and am able to do more for the kingdom. Listening to her, marveling at her courage and strength, I couldn't help but think about Caleb, the wholehearted leader Moses sent to spy out the promised land. He never embraced the idea of retirement either. He lived like all his years were the golden years, and at the end of his life, he was still as strong as ever and full of vision for the future. Even at 85, he held on to all that God had promised him when he was 40, when he first laid eyes on Hebron. Keep your eyes on Hebron. Hebron was a desert region rich with history and natural resources, including an abundant water supply. Great men and women of faith had lived there and been buried there. Abraham and his wife Sarah, their son Isaac, and his wife Rebekah, and Isaac's son Jacob and his wife Leah. It was also where God had made a covenant with Abraham and promised him he would be the father of many nations. Abraham, the man called the friend of God. Understandably then, the word Hebron actually means the binding friendship place. In so many ways, Hebron was sacred ground, blessed land, fertile and significant. When Moses first sent Caleb and the 11 other spies into the promised land to scope it out for the children of Israel, Hebron was inhabited by giants, people of great size, sometimes topping 9 feet tall, including the sons of Anak. A famous descendant of Anak was the giant Goliath, the Philistine whom David defeated with a slingshot. When the spies returned and gave their report to Moses, 10 of them were fearful. "We can't attack those people," they said. "They are stronger than we are." Numbers chapter 13, verse 31. But Caleb had a different perspective. "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." Numbers chapter 13, verse 30. When everyone else wanted to back off, Caleb wanted to charge right in. But, as I mentioned in the last chapter, it would take another 45 years before Caleb would receive that land that God had promised. During all those wilderness years, he kept believing, and he kept himself vitally alive, spiritually, physically, mentally, and emotionally, eager to possess what God had promised him. Over the course of 4 decades, he never let go of the promise that Hebron was his. His attitude was all in. He looked to the future with nothing but hope and courage. Even so, it's not unreasonable to think that at 85, he might well have been ready for retirement. He could have said something like, "I made it through the wilderness, and I've done my time. I've led men in battle and helped families find their peace of the promised land. I've set up and torn down more tent cities than any military commander on earth. I've contributed diligently to my IRA and my 401k. I've watched my children grow up and have children of their own. And I've got plenty of stories to tell. Now is the time to kick back and play golf in the desert, even if it's just one big sand trap." But he didn't. He wasn't content to just have stories to tell. He wanted to keep living the great story God had written for him. Caleb knew where his help came from, and he had the kind of wisdom that only comes with time. So instead of settling into retirement, he did battle with giants and prevailed. In accordance with the Lord's command to him, Joshua gave to Caleb, son of Jephunneh, a portion in Judah, Kiriath Arba, that is Hebron. From Hebron, Caleb drove out the 3 Anakites, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the sons of Anak. Joshua chapter 15, verses 13 to 14. Isn't it fascinating that Caleb was the one willing and able to take on these 3 giants, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, and that he had to wait until he was 85 to do it? Could it be that sometimes there are giants we can defeat only because we've been seasoned long enough by our wilderness years to know we can? That we followed God long enough to be strong and confident in who we are in Christ and in what we can do in His strength? When Caleb was old enough, strong enough, and mature enough, he defeated those 3 giants and took possession of the land. as his reward, and as an inheritance for all the generations to come. He'd lived long enough to be confident that every battle is the Lord's, no matter how big the giants are. Do you think that maybe you have a Hebron too? Maybe you've raised your family, had a fulfilling career, and diligently grown your nest egg. You're all set. But what if God has more for you? Especially now that you are older and wiser. You know things, the kind of things you couldn't have known when you were younger. What if there are some enemies that only you can slay? Enemies only a mature, seasoned, passionate believer could ever take down. Enemies that need to be destroyed to prepare the way for generations to come after you. Now is the time to take your Hebron. Now is the time to do more, not less. Now is the time for your life to wind up, not down, because the way of life winds upward for the wise. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 24, New King James Version. Even though I already had run a ministry for years, Equip and Empower, God had more for me to do, more ministries for me to innovate and pioneer, more ways for me to share the gospel, more knowledge for me to learn so I could keep growing. When I was 41, I started A21. When I was 48, I started Propel. When I was 50, I started a global television program. When I was 51, I started graduate school. At this point, my attitude is like Caleb's. What's next? I'm ready for it. I'm excited for the unexpected. I'm all in. Let's go. I am fully convinced that nowhere in the Word does it ever say stop. Nowhere does it say to retire, as we've come to understand retirement. That's why God was prompting Laura's heart to hunger for more. That's why he wanted her to come volunteer for us. He didn't want her to slow down or stop. He didn't want to waste all the years he'd been preparing her for all he had prepared for her. He wanted her to keep fulfilling her purpose, to step into the God assignment that only she could fulfill, because what she brought to the team comes only with age, a reward and powerful gift from God. When she seemed to be perfectly set up for a season of ease, everything on the inside of her said there had to be more. So she stretched beyond her comfort zone where everything was safe and familiar. I understand that kind of stretching. In everything God has called me to do, I've not known exactly where to begin, but each time, God has led me to stretch. I've learned that the unexpected growth God wants for us is in the stretch, not in our pulling back. The grace and the blessing are in the stretch. To do what God has called us to do isn't possible without the stretch. He's calling us to stretch past our fear, past our insecurity, past our convenience. He wants us to stretch so we can move forward. But we must fight to move forward, to make room for him to do more in and through our lives. We must resist the pressure of others' expectations and the inertia of settling for our comfort zones. Those are the signs of aging in ways we were never meant to age. We have to combat them, especially when we're tempted to think we've done enough. Just because we've raised our kids, completed our career, and welcomed grandkids into our hearts doesn't mean we are through. At my age, I could rationalize that I've done enough for the kingdom, for the church, for the global community. But I really haven't. None of us has if we're still alive. If we were done here on earth, God would take us home. He always has more for us to do. Even if we don't move as fast as we used to, even if it takes us a little longer to get it done. You were made for more than bingo. As I've grown older, I have had to acknowledge some of the same signs of aging that we all do and fight against them. It's hard work to resist growing old and choosing to live agelessly, to choose being completed over depleted, to pioneer instead of settle, to advance instead of retreat, to simply keep taking risks. But I willingly push myself to fight the good fight of faith so I can stay young at heart. For example, I've had to choose to resist the gravitational pull to the security of routines. I remember when my mum was alive, I would call her almost every week, and in each phone call, she lamented that she didn't see me enough. So, when I planned a trip home to Australia, which I did several times a year, she was always so excited I was coming, and I couldn't wait to see her too. But if I wanted to visit on a Wednesday, she would tell me I couldn't come, even though I'd call weeks in advance to let her know, and even though I'd reminded her over and over as the date approached, and even though I called her as soon as we landed. She was always quick to let me know that Wednesdays were out of the question. Wednesday night was bingo night, and it didn't matter that I'd flown 14 hours to see her. Bingo night was bingo night, not family night. Nick and I always laughed about it, but it was still hard to understand. You would think she would move heaven and earth to see me, and she would, just not on bingo night. How many of us have bingo nights in our lives? Those weekly or monthly events for which we just aren't willing to flex, even if one of the most important people in our lives wants to interrupt our routine. What if Jesus wanted to stop by and introduce a new adventure to us? Would we be willing to skip whatever it is to listen? How can we be truly open to God and His kingdom purposes for us if we're unwilling to let go of bingo night? We think we're completely open to whatever God asks because we're good Christians. But when someone wants to interrupt our bingo night, we find out how rigid and resistant we really are. We don't really want to be inconvenienced. We might say we want to go to the morning Bible study at the church, but only if we don't have to get up earlier than normal. We might say we want to volunteer at the hospital, the local elementary school, or the senior center, but not if the only opening is on the same day as bingo. How can we ever create more space for God to move in our lives if we aren't willing to flex all these bingo nights in our lives? As much as I like my favorite Greek foods and favorite Greek restaurants, I always push myself to try something new. I love date night with Nick, but I don't want to be so committed to our date night that I miss a date with Jesus. I also don't want to become someone who might refuse to go to Thursday night prayer at church because that's the night of my favorite TV show. Let's risk shaking up our routines and keep ourselves available for God, even on bingo night. Let's stay flexible. I like to think I'm flexible and invincible and open to new adventures. And most of the time I am, until I go to the trampoline park with Sophia. More than once, I've gone with her to jump and flip and bend like a pretzel, only to find out that I'm not a pretzel anymore. And I always pay for it the next day, when I can barely stand up straight. This body that bore two children and has traveled the globe for more than 20 years no longer likes to be flung into the air and then bounced off a springing canvas. But each time she asks me to go, I feel compelled to go just so I don't quit trying. I want to keep working on staying flexible, and so I keep stretching in every way. I read books all the time to keep myself current with knowledge about leading teams, parenting my kids, and staying strong emotionally. I can't expect to remain an effective leader to my team if I don't keep enlarging in knowledge and the skillful application of it. I can't expect to keep up with a generation that speaks differently and was educated differently from my generation if I don't enlarge my mind to understand them and learn how to communicate effectively with them. As tempting as it is, I cannot rest on the success of my past to take me into the future in any area of my life. I recently started working on my master's degree in evangelism and leadership at Wheaton College. I enrolled in a Propel cohort with more than 20 other women from our Propel chapters. When I started, it had been 30 years since I last sat in a classroom. Even though I have a degree from Sydney University in Australia, and have experience with university-level education, entering the American college system was intimidating. I had no idea what to expect, and the more I thought about it all, the more terrified I became that I wouldn't be able to write a paper, even though I can write books. Fear is never logical. I almost talked myself out of starting the course, but my desire to keep growing is greater than my fear of failure. I want to keep growing in my capacity to speak and lead others to Christ. I want my mind to stay active and my spirit alert. I want to stay flexible. I want to be like Laura. Ever since Laura joined our A21 team, she's kept learning. She knows it's part of God's growth plan to keep her flexible, alive, and young. And she's willing to let others teach her. I love how the team helps me when I have a new project I don't know how to begin. They show me shortcuts on the computer or a website that will make me more productive. They are amazing. I laugh sometimes at how some things are so over my head. But God equips me and He uses my teammates. I love what I have stepped into. What Laura stepped into was remaining flexible so she could keep flourishing, not just for herself, but also for the next generation. When I read Laura's volunteer application, one of the most powerful statements she made, the one that moved me so deeply, was her desire to leave her grandkids more than just memories. She wanted to leave them a legacy, even though at the time of applying to A21, she didn't know what that was. It was just a desire that God planted in her heart, and she was obedient to pursue it, even though she couldn't define it. She was willing to follow the leading of the Lord even before she had understanding, and God gave her the desire of her heart. My grandchildren love to hear about all of the world changes, as I call them, in the local office where I work and those serving around the world, Laura said. It has brought a rich dynamic to our relationships that I could never have anticipated. One of my granddaughters even told me that she really likes how happy I am now that I work with world changers, and that she is going to be a world changer someday too. Because I was willing to grow, God has given her a vision for a future that is so much bigger than before. I absolutely love it that my granddaughter wants to follow in my footsteps doing kingdom work. Having her granddaughter want to follow in her footsteps is definitely inspiring a legacy. Laura's renewed vision for her future, even when it was fuzzy and unclear what that future actually was, is what moved her forward. As she willingly pursued that vision, it came into focus and led her to A21. Getting to leave a legacy was the unexpected blessing on the other side of her obedience. What spark has God put into your heart? Where does He want you to work, serve, or volunteer? Who does He want you to reach, love, encourage, and mentor? Who is on the other side of your obedience? Where might you need to be flexible and stretch yourself to take the next step? I believe you are the answer to someone's prayers. You are an unexpected blessing in someone's life. God wants to use you, and He wants you to have a vision for every age and stage of life, including this one. Exercise a new muscle. Now that I'm over 50, I go to the doctor more often for checkups. Who knew there were so many things to examine? They want to monitor my heart, my bone density, and my hormones. If I ask about any kind of new issue, they usually just say it's a sign of age. On one particular visit, I explained to my doctor how I wanted to be sure I was still fit, because after all, I have a preteen and a teenager to keep up with. So the doctor added a test to analyze my muscle mass. When the results revealed that I had 31% body fat, I was shocked. The healthy range for a fit woman my age was 21 to 25%. My results couldn't be right. So I went to the gym for a second opinion. Yes, I was in denial. When they tested me, they were just as quick as the doctor to inform me that I was skinny fat. That meant I looked healthy on the outside, but inside my muscles were atrophying. I literally was losing muscle mass. I wasn't overweight, but I wasn't fit either. It was part of growing older, they said. I knew then they were in a conspiracy with my doctor. If I wanted to be fit and resist the aging process, I needed to lift weights. In other words, if you don't use it, you lose it. There is no stasis mode when it comes to muscle mass. If you aren't getting stronger, then actually, you are getting weaker. If you aren't increasing, then you're decreasing. I knew it was time to move past denial and propel forward, but I had no idea where to begin. I had always loved to run and bike, but I had never lifted weights and worked out in a gym. On my first visit, I just stared at all those weights because it was overwhelming. I had no idea how to pick one up properly and not hurt myself. I had no idea how much weight was safe for me to lift. It was also intimidating, but I had made the commitment to fight the signs of aging, and with the help of a trainer, I started building strength. In the beginning, I could only lift a few pounds, and I certainly couldn't do any push-ups, but I stayed with it for weeks and months, and now it's been a few years. I am so much stronger, and I can now do more push-ups than Nick. I tell my girls that I want to be a super granny for Jesus, because I keep lifting heavier and heavier weights. I've built muscles I didn't even know I had, but they are muscles that have been there all along. Once again, isn't that what Laura did? She had mental, spiritual, and emotional muscles God wanted her to keep using. He didn't want the strength he developed in her to atrophy in a season of life we call retirement. He didn't mind if she changed the rhythm of her life, especially after decades of devotion to her family, community, and business, but he didn't want her to stop. Your best years are ahead of you. When I look around the office at all our younger volunteers, I think of all we could have missed if Laura had decided to retire instead of refire. We would have missed such unexpected blessings of her shepherding, mentoring, and leading. And she would have missed out on so many blessings too. I want to activate more women like Laura, women like you. Right now, there are more than 76 million baby boomers in the United States and more than 83 million millennials. And we all need each other. The millennials need the boomers to help them mature, and the boomers need the millennials to help them stay young at heart. It's time for all of us to step into our places and not subject ourselves to the world's system of retirement, so we keep building the kingdom of God and live with an eternal perspective, never fearing the future. That's what Laura did, and today she is no longer a volunteer. Laura is on our staff team as the Global Volunteer Coordinator. What she brought to our California office volunteers, she now gives to all our volunteers, wherever they are serving A21 around the world. Her contribution and leadership are a huge blessing and answer to prayer. She has never stopped being grateful for all God has done to give her a new lease on life, and neither have we. When my daughters and I were sick, it felt like my best years were over, Laura said. I'm so thankful God healed me and showed me how big He really can be. That I am a vessel for His purposes. That's my mission. I'm so glad He showed me that my best years are ahead of me. And so are yours. If you'll stretch beyond where you are, if you'll break out of your bingo night, if you'll work all the muscles God gave you, if you'll take the risk to obey and start something new. Chapter 8. When the unexpected is incremental. Taking the next step. A keen sense of humor helps us overlook the unbecoming, understand the unconventional, tolerate the unpleasant, overcome the unexpected, and outlast the unbearable. Billy Graham. It wasn't the most glamorous night of my life as a traveling evangelist. I was sleeping on a cot, doing my best not to wake the three small children under age 5 with whom I was sharing a room. I had been trying to sleep face down and breathe into my pillow so I wouldn't catch the flu that one of the kids was fighting, but I was so uncomfortable. Exhausted from not really being able to sleep, mostly due to fighting slow suffocation, I had to turn over and pray for germ-free air. But trying to do so quietly on a creaky camping cot required more dexterity and balance than I had anticipated. On my first try, I had simply started to roll over, but the cot and all the covers weighing me down wanted to roll over with me. It took all my strength to overcome the centrifugal force that would have landed me on the floor with the cot on top of me. My next attempt involved gently sliding the covers onto the floor, a mere 6 inches below me, and trying my first move again. Not exactly brilliant, but in my fatigued state, it seemed worth a shot. but the removal of the covers made no difference. I still seemed destined to land on the floor with a loud crash. Collapsing on my stomach in defeat, I was tempted to laugh, but instead I started to cry. None of this is what I expected, but it was exactly what I had wanted. From the time I was 21, I felt desperate to serve God, and I had prayed fervently for Him to use me. So when leaders at my church asked for volunteers to serve on a cleanup team in the youth ministry, I said yes. When the assistant youth pastor asked me to help start the Hills District Youth Service, a local non-profit community youth center for at-risk teens, I said yes. Then, when my senior pastor called me and said, "Christine, I want you to be the state director of our denomination's youth movement, Youth Alive," I said yes. I was passionate about Jesus and willing to serve in any way that would be useful for the kingdom of God to advance on the earth. I had prayed, "Here I am, Lord, send me," and then left the where and to whom up to Him. So for the previous 7 years, I had crisscrossed Australia, mostly travelling alone in my car down country roads in New South Wales, making my way from Sydney to a different country town each week. Sometimes I had driven 8 to 9 hours at a stretch to develop youth leaders, help build youth ministries, and speak at evangelistic rallies. Seeing teens come to Jesus was what I loved. Being used by God was what I wanted. I never lost my wonder at seeing God save young people. For those 7 years, I had walked out my yes and faithfully served God, stepping through every open door in each new town, even when that meant couch surfing in the homes of people who attended local churches and sponsored Youth Alive. Tonight, my hosts were a gracious couple eager to impact the youth in their community. I was grateful for their accommodation, but being 29 and stuck face down on a camping cot was not where I had expected my itinerant evangelist life to lead me. Granted, I'm not sure I really knew what to expect, but this wasn't it. I just never imagined sharing a room with three sleeping kids stuck face down trying not to breathe flu germs. Determined not to let this be the pinnacle of my ministry life, I decided to give it one last effort to roll over and not fall on the floor. Somehow, rolling over had become a critical goal to accomplish. So after doing a careful mental calculation of the necessary strategic moves, I lifted myself up with my arms and flipped myself over as fast as I could spin. The cot bounced and banged noisily on the floor, but I nailed it and the kids didn't wake up. Success. Despite my triumphant rollover, my feelings of victory were short-lived. Staring into the dark, I couldn't deny the unexpected loneliness that had begun to creep into my heart. I couldn't deny the doubts that made me wonder if I had made a wrong decision, if I was in the wrong place and not really making a difference. I couldn't deny the real reasons I couldn't sleep. As the tears slipped off my face and onto the pillow, my doubts piled up one on top of the other. I could hear my mum's voice in my head, "Christina, you're wasting your life. How can you live like this? How will you ever get married? You're eating rice and beans. You resigned a corporate job and salary package with incredible benefits for this? Besides all that, a girl has no business driving hours and hours on desolate roads all alone." I reached for the covers I'd tossed on the floor and pulled them close. Thinking of all my friends who had graduated from Bible school with me, I imagined them thriving as youth pastors, associate pastors, and worship leaders, positions I perceived were better, more stable, and included the benefits of being surrounded by a team. When I had last spoken with one of them, even she had admitted several of them didn't understand why I had accepted this position, that driving around the countryside didn't make any sense. I thought of all my friends who I'd left behind in the corporate world and how they were living their dreams, climbing the ladder to success. I was happy for all of them, really, but tonight it was hard not to believe they all had it so much better than me, that they weren't as lonely as me. And I was absolutely certain they were sound asleep in nice, comfy beds, probably even sleeping in the same cushy bed every night. My thoughts surprised me. I had digressed from being lonely to questioning my decisions to thinking about my friends sleeping in real beds. I couldn't help but laugh at myself. My predicament was funny and miserably uncomfortable. And my thoughts was so absurd. Taking a big sigh and drying my damp face with the sheet, I knew better than to give in to all my irrational thinking. I'm sure my friends were going through their own trying experiences. Everyone has his or her story. I had to believe God was going to use all of this. I just wasn't sure what for. And deep down, I knew even my mum meant well. Her questions were valid, logical motherly concerns. But I knew this was right. I knew that the desire God had put in my heart, the trust my leaders had placed in me, and the lives I was seeing changed week after week were right. I just needed some sleep. That's all. A good night's sleep. Lord, send me. The night I wrestled with the cot and my ridiculous thoughts was more than 20 years ago. Looking back, that whole night seemed so silly, and yet it was so powerfully significant. Back then, I was an anomaly, a single, traveling, female evangelist, and at times I felt so alone. There was no one who could have prepared me for what that would feel like, to spend hours on the road alone, to be the only woman I knew doing what I was doing, and to constantly feel the pressure to inspire vision in others, often wondering myself if we really could change the world. Going from town to town to meet with business people, government officials, and church leaders was a pioneering effort, and no one had mentored me in what the pain of spearheading a new endeavor felt like. No one had told me what a lonely road it can be for individuals who are building something new, reaching for a goal, or pursuing a dream, or simply doing something they believed God has called them to do. Yes, I had immense support from my home church and great friends in ministry, but in the day-to-day execution of my role, traveling from town to town, I was isolated. What I didn't understand then was that God was orchestrating my journey for my future. He knew what was ahead years down the road, that I would initiate and build ministries and organizations using the very skills I was learning, but I didn't. He knew all my future assignments, and he was preparing me. He was focused on the big picture of that season in my life, while I was focused on one miserable night, wrestling with my doubts and unexpected realities. Now that I'm decades beyond that comical night, I see that moment as a symbol of a place that's familiar to us all. Whether we're an aspiring professional paying our dues while hoping for a promotion, a student toughing out a boring job to get through school, or a stay-at-home mum who has put her career on hold to change diapers and chase toddlers, we all have rough nights when we can't sleep, and we doubt our decisions, especially when nothing turns out like we expected. We feel all alone in our efforts. Our colleagues or friends seem to pass us by. We fail at something along the way. But God is always using our present to prepare us for our future. That night, as I laughed at myself and tried to get my thoughts realigned with God's thoughts, I began to see my circumstances through his perspective. Deep down, I knew God was good and that he does good. I knew he loved me and that choosing to trust him was the best choice. I knew he had a plan and a purpose for my life, and that somehow all of this, this unexpected season of my life, was part of that preparation. I knew he hadn't forgotten me, even though that night it felt like he had. By faith, I had pushed myself to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And as much as I didn't want to admit it then, the whole concept of walking by faith and not by sight had sounded far more glamorous when I first said yes. Now that it was my day-to-day reality, it felt a lot more grunge than glam. But even though it wasn't easy, I believed God was working out all things for my good, and that somehow he was going to use all of this. So once again, I joined with the prophet Isaiah saying, "Here I am, Lord, send me." And I resolved to keep moving forward. Little by little. What I was learning was something God wants all of us to remember through every leg of our journey. The only way to obtain the promises of God is through faith and patience. That applies to everything, including any words, goals, plans, dreams, or visions he's placed in our hearts. God makes the promises, and our part is to persevere, just as the writer of Hebrews told us. We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 12. Maybe you have a dream, a goal, a plan you've been working toward for years, and you feel God has forgotten you. Maybe you have wanted to start a business, go back to school, build a non-governmental organization, serve in your community, become a foster parent, go on a mission trip, lead a ministry. Whatever it is, God has not forgotten you. The dreams, visions, and plans God places in our hearts take time, lots of time. And during all that time, God is working in us so he can work through us. Again, our part is to exercise faith and patience in the process. Faith is believing God, believing that he is who he says he is, and that he will do what he said he would do. Patience is our capacity to tolerate delay, to wait. It's trusting that God is good, God does good, and God knows what he is doing, no matter how long it takes and no matter what our purpose may be. As I have walked this out in my own life, from those years of traveling around the countryside of Australia to stepping into every initiative since, I have found God's process to be strategic and tailor-made for my life. It is the same for your life and God's journey for you. But living our lives with purpose, walking in faith and patience, often feels countercultural to us. We live in a digital world, connected globally by the internet and social media, so we have instant access to everything from news to products to real-time videos of world events. As a culture, we consider it normal to get everything we want on demand. Even our reality TV shows give the illusion of overnight success. But there are no overnight success stories, really. No one picks up a microphone one day and rises to stardom the next. There are years of hard work in between the beginning of something and whatever it is we deem a success. There are significant life lessons to be learned in the years of working toward a goal. And for us as believers, there are places God wants us to go through that take time so he can prepare us for the future he's designed for us. When people ask me how I got to where I am today, leading Equip and Empower Ministries, A21, and Propel, I remember that night on the cot and smile. I don't have 5 steps to destiny or 7 keys to ending global injustice. All I have to share is the process God has walked me through, which is the same one I've seen him walk everyone through when they embrace the dream he placed in their hearts. Whether it was becoming a doctor, a teacher, or a journalist, operating a franchise, or staying home to raise a family. No matter the objective, the process is the same. God places in our hearts a calling, a mission, a goal, an idea, a destiny, and then he leads us to it through small, incremental steps. It's a principle of growth depicted throughout the Bible. The prophet Isaiah said it this way. He tells us everything over and over, one line at a time, a little here and a little there. Isaiah chapter 28, verse 10, New Living Translation. This same step-by-step process is evident in how God led the children of Israel out of slavery, in Egypt, and into the promised land. They had been enslaved for 430 years, and God knew they had a slave mentality that would hold them back from possessing all God had for them. As much as they wanted to leave Egypt and get quickly to the promised land, God didn't race them across the desert. Instead, he led them on an unexpected journey through the desert. I deeply resonate with this story. Even though God put a desire in my heart to serve him when I first became a believer, I was not ready then for all the initiatives I lead now. He had to begin healing me by renewing my mind from a slave mentality, from a victim who had been abandoned, adopted, and abused, so I could step into whatever promised land he had for me in my future. Likewise, even though God freed the children of Israel and led them to the promised land, he couldn't let them possess all the land immediately. Instead, he worked a very deliberate plan, one that I believe he works in our lives as well. When he marched them across the Jordan River, they faced all the inhabitants living in the land, including the giants Caleb eventually defeated. But God didn't lead them to conquer all the inhabitants in a short period of time. Rather, he helped his people to drive them out little by little. But I will not drive them out in a single year, because the land would become desolate.